All glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayet Nashtaprayeshva Badreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavatir Uttamashloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya cha Nanda Gopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 7, entitled The Sacrifice Performed by Daksha, Text Number 8. Vidaya Katsye Nachatad यदाह भगवान भवः संददुःखस्य कायेन सवनीय पशो शिरः विदाय कार्त्स्येन च तद् यदाह भगवान भवः सन्ददुःखस्य कायेन सवनीय पशो शिरः विदाय कार्त्स्येन च तद् यदाह भगवान् भवः सन्ददुःखस्य कायेन सवनीय पशो शिरः word to word translation. Vidaya, executing, Karsnena, all in all, cha, also, tat, that, yat, which, aha, was said, Bhagavan, the Lord, Bhava, Shiva, Sandadu, executed, kasya, of the living, daksha, kayena, with the body, savaniya, meant for sacrifice, pasho, of the animal, shira, head. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation, After everything was executed exactly as directed by Lord Shiva, Daksha's body was joined to the head of the animal meant to be killed in the sacrifice. Purport. This time all the demigods and the great sages were very careful not to irritate Lord Shiva. Therefore, whatever he asked was done. It is specifically said here that Daksha's body was joined to the head of an animal, a goat. Oma Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuron Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namavo Mishnupadaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य दशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. So we are reading this chapter on sacrifice performed by Daksha. This is the last chapter in this Daksha Yajna. So after Sati committed, ended her body by entering into fire, Lord Shiva became so angry, and Lord Shiva sent his associates, Veerabhadra and others, they came and actually they killed Daksha, they harmed the different associates of the Daksha, the Brahmanas present over there, and they completely devastated the sacrifice which was being performed by Daksha. And then when the sacrifice was stopped and so many people were actually attacked and killed, then Lord Brahma goes along with all the demigods to Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma actually pacifies Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma glorifies Lord Shiva, and then Lord Brahma tells to Lord Shiva that please do something so that the sacrifice can go on, because the sacrifice were meant for the welfare of the entire universe. Therefore now Daksha was Daksha definitely committed an offense to you, but still Daksha was a pious person. He was actually devoted to performing yajnas. So now since the sacrifice is stopped, this is not good for the well-being of the entire universe. Therefore, please do something so that the yajna can go on and revive the sacrifice. Please revive Daksha so that he can perform the yajna. That is how Lord Brahma requested Lord Shiva. And in response, Lord Shiva, he told Brahma that I do not mind the offenses created by the demigods, because these demigods were childish and less intelligent. I do not take a serious view of their offenses, but I punished them only with a view to actually correct them. So, and then Lord Shiva said that, okay, let Daksha be revived, but Daksha will have the head of a goat. Daksha will have the head of the goat. And Bhaga, he will be able to see his share of sacrifice through the eyes of Mitra. There was another associate of Daksha, Bhaga. He actually lost his eyes. So he will be able to see through the eyes of Mitra. And Pusha will be able to chew only through the teeth of his disciples. And the demigods have agreed to give me my sacrifice. They will recover from all of their injuries. Other people who either laughed at me when Daksha was offending, or who supported Daksha in whatever extent, okay, they will have some punishment. They will have maybe some of their limbs will be improper. But still, I give them some concessions so that they can actually perform the sacrifice, they can take part in the sacrifice. Huh. And in this way, Lord Shiva actually at this point, previously he gave the all his Lord Shiva's associates, they actually punished Daksha and his associates, but in one sense, maybe they over-punished them. Daksha was killed and other associates were like harmed very severely. But now the Lord Shiva is actually giving a very balanced punishment in such a way that the sacrifice can be revived and sacrifice can go on. At the same time, they know that they have committed the mistake, so they have some punishment. Daksha will have the head of a goat. So by seeing the head of the goat, Daksha will be reminded of his mistake. At the same time, he can continue his service as a Prajapati. Huh. So Lord Shiva is giving at this point, Lord Shiva, at the request of Lord Brahma, he is giving a balanced punishment to Daksha and his associates. So I'll discuss on this theme. Generally, we find the principle of punishment or forgiveness very often. We either tend to over-punish a person or we tend to be compassionate, we tend to be more compassionate than the person actually deserves. Huh. So very often we either sometimes being carried away by the mode of passion, we actually tend to over-punish a person. Or sometimes being carried away by the mode of goodness, we show some undue compassion to people. So we find especially to have the to balance between punishment and compassion, the fundamental thing is that to balance between punishment and compassion, one has to balance between the Buddhi and Bhava, intelligence and the feelings. So generally, when we get carried away by the feelings, it could be like we can get carried away by the feeling of revenge, feeling of anger, and we may lose our intelligence. Or we may get carried away by the feeling of soft corner towards somebody. And that can also carry away our intelligence. That can also carry away our intelligence. So therefore, we have to balance between the buddhi and bhava in order to take the right decision on how much to punish and how much to show compassion. And that is why Krishna says that Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. One worships me with the intelligence and with the feelings. So, yeah, in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he has got the perfect balance between the buddhi and bhava. But we living entities, in the material world, many times we get carried away by some of the feelings of either like Dhruva Maharaj, he got carried away by the mode of passion. And he ended up over-punishing the yakshas. Huh. Bharat Maharaj, out of his feelings of compassion towards the deer, he forgot all his intelligence of wanting to perform the devotional service for which he came to actually the forest to dedicate the last part of his life to completely engage in devotional service. But he got carried away with the mode of by the compassion. By the feelings of soft corner towards the deer. So we find that, like for example, in the character of Krishna, that one of the 64 quality of Krishna is that he is compassionate. He's highly compassionate. For example, Bhishma Dev talks about Krishna's compassion. He says that, yeah, in the case of Krishna's compassion, when Krishna went to, Krishna saw the condition of the kings who were captured by King Jarasandha, Krishna felt so compassionate towards those kings. Those kings had sent a message to Krishna. And Krishna felt so compassionate and he went along with Bhima and Arjuna and he killed Jarasandha through Bhima. And these kings, they had practically lost all hope. Jarasandha had put them under a deep dungeon, in a deep dungeon, and they were not able to even see the light of the sun. But Krishna, out of his compassion, he brought light in their life. He removed the darkness. So, this is Krishna's compassion towards the kings, the kings who were held captive by Jarasandha. And another instance of Krishna's compassion, when Bhishma Dev was lying in the deathbed, Bhishma Dev was very anxious to see Krishna, and Krishna appeared in front of Bhishma. And upon seeing the pitiable condition of Bhishma, Krishna started actually crying. Krishna started crying. And not only was he shedding tears, but Krishna forgot himself in his compassion towards Bhishma. So, this is another instance. There are so many instances of Krishna's compassion, but Krishna is showing compassion towards Bhishma. So, therefore, Rupa Goswami says that, therefore, devotees, instead of offering obeisances to Krishna, devotees offer obeisances to the compassionate nature of Krishna, who is represented by Srimati Radharani. So therefore, this is one of the quality of Krishna. But another quality of Krishna, he is highly intelligent. A person is considered to be highly intelligent if a person has sharp memory and fine discretion. Sharp memory, this quality was exhibited by Krishna, that when Krishna went to study under Sandipani Muni, he would hear once the different arts start by Sandipani Muni. By once hearing, he would master the art. In 64 days, he mastered the 64 arts. So, fine discretion means like fine discrimination. So, this quality was exhibited by Krishna, the way Krishna dealt with Kalayavan. So, Kalayavan was a Yavana. When he attacked Krishna, if Krishna had directly fought with Kalayavana, he could have killed Kalayavan. But then, according to the Kshatriya codes of conduct, if a Kshatriya fights with a Yavana, one loses the Kshatriya status. So after that, Krishna would not be able to fight with any of the other Kshatriyas. In fact, Jarasandha was also there attacking simultaneously. So therefore, Krishna had to kill Kalayavana. At the same time, he cannot personally kill Kalayavan. If he doesn't kill Kalayavan, then Kalayavan will attack Mathura. So he has to kill Kalayavan. At the same time, he cannot kill personally. So here, Krishna's quality of fine intelligence is exhibited. So Krishna Krishna actually went towards that cave where Muchukunda was sleeping. Muchukunda was sleeping. And then Kalayavan followed behind. And you know the story that Kalayavan, he kicked that Muchukunda thinking that Krishna is sleeping. And Muchukunda got up, and then when he saw Kalayavan, by his angry eyes, Kalayavan was burnt. So we find that the personality of Krishna, Krishna has got so many multiple qualities, but greatness of Krishna is that he doesn't make any of the qualities as the goal, but he uses the qualities as a tool. So many times in this world, when different people have different qualities. So their life is dedicated to that quality. But every quality, however good it may be, it also has a flip side. So compassion also has a flip side, that one can be, if you are dedicated to compassion, sometimes you may show undue compassion to somebody who deserves punishment. So therefore, many times people make the qualities as a goal, but Krishna uses the quality as a tool for establishing dharma, for bringing the conditioned soul close to him, for drawing the affection of the devotees, for the greater good of the society. So we find that, and in fact, in the same story of the way Krishna dealt with Kalevana, both Krishna's intelligence as well as compassion, both the qualities are there. So Krishna's intelligence in how he dealt with Kalevana, we see that. At the same time, Krishna's compassion towards Muchukunda was also there. Because Muchukunda is his devotee, and Krishna wanted to, he saw that his devotee is sleeping for a long time, and he wanted to awaken his devotee from this slumber. So there is a, we can see the perfect samanvaya between the buddhi and bhava, intelligence and also compassion towards Muchukunda. So therefore, that and also we find in Narasingadev, how he balanced between punishment and compassion. Narasingadev is the personification of anger, and he descended and killed Hiranyakashipu in such a ghastly manner. He actually removed all the he tore open his belly, and then removed all the flesh from his body, and then like the whole form of Narasingadev is smeared with the blood and other this thing. He gave such a severe punishment to Hiranyakashipu, but at the same time he showed compassion to Hiranyakashipu. The sense that after killing Hiranyakashipu, he sat on the throne of Hiranyakashipu. He sat on the throne of Hiranyakashipu. This is also an act of compassion. Generally, when we want to offer something to the Lord, we first purify that article and then we offer that to the Lord. Even when we offer an asan to the Lord, we first purify that place and then we offer that to the Lord. We cannot offer something which was used by any living entity, and what to speak of something which was used by a person like Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu had sat on the throne, and then he performed all the atrocious activities. He gave orders to kill the cows and the brahmanas. But in that throne, Narasingadev went and sat on the throne. So although Hiranyakashipu had forgotten his position as a servant of the Lord, but Narasingadev did not forget. So this person is my servant. So he wanted to give some credit to him for having performed a service to him. So therefore, he went and sat in the throne, and then in that way he gave credit to him. So in that sense, we find that this balance between compassion and punishment, that foundation for that balance between compassion and punishment is the balance between the buddhi and bhava, which is in one sense the one of the core aspect of the Vedic Sanatan Dharma, the balance between buddhi and bhava. Like right in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, we find that naimishe nimishakshetre rishaya shaunakadayaha satram swargaya lokaya. Is that next line? Okay. So naimisha, in the naimisharanya, the sages performed sacrifice for 1,000 years. So in that purport, Prabhupada gives the definition of a rishi. He says rishi means one who
one who has a great concern for doing welfare to the people. He has a great concern for doing welfare to the people. And then the second point is that one who also knows how to do welfare to the people. There is one aspect is the feeling of compassion towards the people. Another is the knowledge of how to actually do welfare. How to do welfare. So therefore, there is a combination of the heart and the head. So when the heart overtakes the head, then one becomes sentimental. And when the head overtakes the heart, then one is simply on an intellectual platform. One is simply a dry logician or a dry intelligence platform. So there has to be a balance between the head and the heart. So therefore, in the preaching also, one has to cultivate that genuine feelings of compassion. At the same time, one should also understand how to do welfare, how to help the person. So there has to be a balance between the heart and the head. And like for example, Srila Prabhupada's godbrother OBL Kapoor, he writes very beautifully in his book on Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So generally, if you find the character of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, among the many religious leaders, they respect Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is mainly known as a devotee. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is mainly known as a devotee who actually chanted and danced and propagated Harinam Sankirtan. And his devotional side of his personality, it has actually eclipsed his philosophical side. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the religious circle, he is not known as a philosopher. He is mainly known as a devotee who propagated Harinam Sankirtan. So, but the devotional side of his personality itself suggests a philosophical side of his nature. Because if you see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a personality, he wrote only 8 shlokas. So therefore, he was like traveling in South India, he just chanted and danced. And as a philosopher, he just discussed with only 2 people, perhaps, maybe Sarvam Bhattacharya, Prakashanand Saraswati, and then Ramananda Rai. But to the common publicly, he mainly chanted and danced and like that. So therefore, he's not known as a philosopher among the general, among the, say, scholastic circle. But OBL Kapoor, he writes so beautifully, he says, it is a mistake to suppose that the predominance of emotions in the life of a devotee renders him incapable of philosophical thinking. But actually it is a mistake, just because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was chanting and dancing, to mistake that, oh, he doesn't understand much philosophy. And that is actually a mistake. On the contrary, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's understanding is so developed and purified that his grasp of things is more intuitive than ratiocinative. And his knowledge of reality is more intimate and complete. Rather, he had such a perfect comprehension of the philosophy, he had such perfect understanding of the reality, that as a natural result of that understanding, he developed a spontaneous, he had a exhibited spontaneous love for the Supreme Lord. So his emotions are the natural outcome of his close apprehension of reality. Not that his emotions have eclipsed, not that just because he was emotional, that doesn't mean he was incapable of philosophical thinking. Rather, he was so deeply rooted in philosophy, rather he had, rather that he had so deeply comprehended and closely comprehended the realities of the Bhagavan, the material world and the Jiva. As a result, his emotions are the natural result of that close comprehension of the reality. So therefore, although externally it appears to be he was according to the, for the common, for the most philosophers, that externally Mahaprabhu appeared to be emotional person, not a philosopher, but rather he had the very close and perfect comprehension of the philosophy. So therefore, again we see that there is a samanvaya between the buddhi and bhava. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in his Dashamula Tattva, when he compares the different philosophies, Vishishta Dvaita, Shuddha Dvaita, and Dvaita Advaita, and what is another? Vishishta Dvaita, Dvaita Advaita, and Shuddha Dvaita, and I think Shuddha Advaita, something. So he says, he mentions that these philosophies of the four sampradayas, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarkacharya, Ramanujan, Madhvacharya, these philosophies do not agree with all the verses of the Vedas. Although all these four Vaishnava sampradayas, from the point of view of the Vishnu or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the point of eternal devotional service to Lord Vishnu, living entity as an eternal servant of Krishna and eternal servitor to Vishnu, in that there is no disagreement among all the four. But in the philosophies which they presented, this Vishishta Dvaita, Shuddha Dvaita, Dvaita Advaita, but they don't agree with all the verses of the Upanishads. And then he mentions, but only the philosophy of Achintya Beda Beda Tattva, it completely agrees with all the verses of the Upanishads and the Vedas. So therefore, and that Achintya Beda Beda Tattva is the contribution of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So therefore, although externally Mahaprabhu appeared to be an emotional person, but he had a very deep and perfect and close comprehension of the reality. So there is a balance between the buddhi and bhava. And we find this in so many examples in the scriptures. For example, we find Vidur, the third canto, when he remembered that, when he heard that Krishna remembered him just before his departure from this world, Vidur started crying out of his deep humility. Oh, I was remembered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead before his departure. He started actually crying, and Prabhupada says that this crying for the Lord is the last word in the progressive stage of self-realization. And the same Vidura, he asked so many questions to Maitreya Rishi, so many detailed questions about so many different subject matters, about the calculation of the time from the atom, about the creation pastimes. So again we find a samanvaya between the buddhi and bhava. Uddhava, when he heard the questions of Vidur about the Yadavas and Krishna and Balram, Uddhava, he became so ecstatic that for 48 minutes he became dead silent, becoming absorbed in ecstasy. And the same Uddhava, he asked so many questions in the Uddhava Gita. The longest section, longest philosophical section in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, spanning over 23 chapters. And the entire discussion was progressing based on the questions of Uddhava. On different types of yoga, and different types of philosophies. So again, we find a samanvaya between the buddhi and bhava. So therefore, So when there is a samanvay between the buddhi and bhava, then there can be a balance between punishment and compassion, which is what we were discussing today. So for example, we have different examples in the scriptures where sometimes a person over-punished because of unrestricted passion. Dhruva Maharaj over-punished the yakshas. Prachetas, they also got carried away by the anger. They burnt so many trees. And then Soma came and actually pacified Prachetas. Janamejay, when he heard that his father Parishit was killed by Takshaka, he got carried away by that anger and he tried to kill all the snakes. He wanted to kill Takshaka, but he ended up killing so many snakes, and then Brihaspati had to intervene. And Shringi, he gave such a severe punishment to Parishit Maharaj that Parishit Maharaj just put a dead snake around the body of his father. But Shringi, he punished the emperor of the entire planet to die within 7 days. Such a severe punishment. Jamadagni, we find that not only the Kshatriyas, even sometimes the Brahmanas also, they also get carried away by the anger. In the case of Shringi or Jamadagni, because either they fall victim to pride or anger. Jamadagni, he gave such a severe punishment to Renuka. When he understood that Renuka was actually meditating on some Gandharva, he gave such a severe punishment to Renuka, and that was because of that, because he over-punished Renuka, and he also got a reaction for that. And Vasishtha Rishi in the 9th canto, he gave a very severe punishment to Prishadra for an unintentional mistake. But unintentionally, Prishadra ended up killing a cow, thinking it to be a tiger. But Prishadra gave a very severe punishment. And Brihaspati, he also punished Indra more than that is required. Yeah, Indra committed a mistake of not respecting Brihaspati. He did not get up to receive Brihaspati when Brihaspati entered the assembly. But Brihaspati, there is a mistake on the part of Brihaspati also, because after Indra sincerely repented, still Brihaspati did not appear. Because Brihaspati also felt offended. He over-punished Indra. That is why Lakshmi Devi says that Jnanam Kvachit Tachana Sangha Varjitam. Some people are learned, but they are attached to getting respected from others. So Brihaspati had an attachment to receiving respect from Indra. So therefore he felt offended. So he ended up over-punishing Indra. So in the story of Mandavya Muni and Yamaraj, so there Mandavya Muni says that one who gives excessive punishment will have to take a lower birth. So that is why Mandavya Muni, he felt that Yamaraj had actually over-punished for a small mistake which he committed in the childhood. So therefore Mandavya Muni cursed Yamaraj to take a lower birth. Therefore he was born as a Vidura, the son of a Shudrani. So we find the reason for excessive punishment is that a person gets carried away by the mode of passion or ignorance, or the samanvaya between the buddhi and bhava is not there. And there are many examples of excessive compassion, or we can say excessive compassion or misplaced compassion. We have examples of like Bhishma's compassion towards the Kauravas. Although he knew that Kauravas, Duryodhan only had plotted to kill the Pandavas in that Varanavata. But still, Bhishma, they hoped that the Kauravas would change. Instead of taking a strict action against the Kauravas, he actually divided the kingdom and he gave one half to Yudhishthir and one half to Duryodhan. So Bhishma, he didn't balance between the compassion and this thing. He was like he showed compassion towards the Kauravas, whereas they deserved punishment. And Bharat Maharaj's compassion towards the deer, excessive compassion towards the deer. He was right in saving the deer, but then he became more attached to the deer. And Shaubari Muni's compassion towards the fishes. Shaubari Muni, he also became excessively compassionate towards the fishes, and by that he ended up actually offending a great devotee of the Lord, the associate of the Lord, Garuda. He actually cursed Garuda. And even another example of excessive compassion is that at the death of the Duryodhan, when Duryodhan was dying, you see the this one, sometime great, some great demoniac people, even after the death, they confuse the people. When they are living, they have done so much of havoc, but even after their death, they actually, they confuse the people and then they leave the body. When Duryodhan actually died, that many devatas, they started showering flowers upon Duryodhan. And in fact, so much so that even Balramji became compassionate towards Duryodhan. Balramji started attacking Bhima. Of course, that is, we can say, transcendental leela. But we can see in this slide that Balramji also became, and then Krishna had to intervene. Krishna stopped Balram. And there is a detail, there's a long conversation between Krishna and Balram. Balramji was arguing, how can Bhima kill Duryodhan below the thighs? Balramji was seeing only from the present perspective, but Krishna was seeing from an overall perspective. He reminded Balramji what all Duryodhan had done. So we can see that incident also shows that sometimes people show misplaced compassion or excessive compassion. Even such demigods, they also, sometimes even good people, they get carried away by the compassion, and they can actually show compassion to the wrong people. And Shukracharya, Krishna says that Kavi Naam Ushana Kavihi. Among the Kavis, I am known as Shukracharya. But even Shukracharya, because of his attachment towards Devayani, his daughter, he should have corrected his daughter Devayani. He should have chastised his daughter Devayani when there was a quarrel between Devayani and Sarmishta. But because of his undue compassion towards Devayani, he went to Vrishaparva and then he told that your daughter has to come as a maid servant. Should become a maid servant to my daughter. So in that sense, we can see Shukracharya's undue compassion. Then, and we also see Vishwamitra's misplaced compassion on Trishanku. He wanted to there was a competition between Vishwamitra and Vasishta, and then he showed the compassion upon Trishanku. He tried to change the universal system only. And Trishanku wanted to go to heaven, but then he was not qualified to go to heaven. He was pushed down from there, and then Vishwamitra created another heaven in between. So therefore, we find that when a person is influenced by passion or ignorance, when a person is not able to balance between the buddhi and bhava, either a person falls victim to unrestricted passion or undue compassion. On the other hand, we have some examples of how there was a balance between punishment and compassion. Kashyapa Muni, after the incident when Diti sincerely repented, at that time Kashyapa Muni says to Diti, because you sincerely repented, your grandson will be a great devotee of the Lord. And then he talks about the qualities of Prahlad Maharaj. But because you did not obey my order, and because you disrespected Lord Shiva, and so therefore you will give birth to two sons, And who will be actually, who will be great demons and who will be offensive to the devotees. So he gave punishment as well as mercy. Because she did not act, she acted improperly, for that punishment was given. At the same time, mercy was given because she sincerely repented. So another example, we see Krishna's punishment and compassion towards Putana. Krishna did punish Putana by giving intense pain to Putana for one moment. It is like, suppose a person is having cancer, and whatever pain which a person is supposed to experiences over a period of, say, 3 months or 4 months period, if he has to experience that entire pain in one moment. So like that, Krishna did punish Putana because Krishna gave that intense suffering for one moment, and Krishna also showed compassion to Putana by rewarding for that desire of Putana, when Putana had a desire when she saw Vamana Dev. If only I could feed Vamana Dev. So there is, we can see, balance between punishment and compassion. And Lord's punishment and mercy towards Chitraketu Maharaj. Prabhupada writes in a purport that Krishna, Lord wanted to bring Chitraketu Maharaj back to the spiritual world fast. So therefore he arranged for that whole incident. Of that Parvati cursing Chitraketu Maharaj, he wanted to bring him fast. This shows the compassion of the Lord, or the mercy of the Lord, or affection of the Lord towards Chitraketu Maharaj. At the same time, another purport Prabhupada says that because Chitraketu Maharaj did not act properly, he tried to correct a superior devotee, Lord Shiva, therefore he was punished for his demonic behavior. By making him a demon. So there is an aspect of mercy as well as compassion. Both are there. And similarly, we have other examples like Prithu Maharaj's anger and mercy towards the earth, Mother Earth. Prithu Maharaj was angry towards Mother Earth. At the same time, he was also merciful towards Mother Earth. He is described that Prithu Maharaj was considered the Mother Earth as his daughter. And Narada Muni's curse and blessing upon Nalakur and Manigiri. And Parishit Maharaj gave punishment to Kali. At the same time, Parishit Maharaj showed mercy to Kali. That you cannot stay in any place where these four sinful activities take place. In that sense, he gave a very limited scope for Kali to reside. At the same time, he showed mercy to Kali because he did not kill Kali. He did not kill Kali. So therefore, I'll conclude with this point. Once Bali Maharaj approached Prahlad Maharaj and asked him, which is actually best, forgiveness or the use of strength? So Prahlad Maharaj thought for some time and replied, neither forgiveness nor the use of strength is good in all the situations. If a person were to always forgive, then the servants and dependents and even strangers would disrespect him. And when one always forgives and never shows the strength to chastise and correct, then mean-minded servants will steal away his wealth. They will actually take advantage of his forgiveness and compassion. On the other hand, a person who only punishes and never forgives, he finds himself bereft of all the servants and friends. People always actually fear him. So everyone comes to hate such an unforgiving person, and they will wait for a slightest opportunity in order to take revenge upon that person. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj says that the conclusion is that the forgiveness and compassion should be exhibited at the proper time. And then he says, the following person should be forgiven. One who has done nice service in the past even if guilty of a grave fault, he should be forgiven. And one who offends due to ignorance or foolishness, he should also be forgiven. And one who is a first time offender, he should also be forgiven. And one who has committed some wrong against his will, and in addition, other offenders may sometimes be forgiven just to create a good public image. Sometimes for sake of Lord Brahma, when he ran after his daughter, okay, Lord actually Lord corrected him. At the same time, he did not remove from his position. He continued his service. He told him to give up his sinful mentality. And then, who are the persons who should not be forgiven? One who has knowingly offended but claims to be innocent, even if his offenses are slight. And a second time offender, no matter how small his misdemeanor. So like that, he says. So therefore, that these are some thoughts about punishment and forgiveness. So essentially what we discussed today was that how a person sometimes goes to excessive punishment or excessive mercy. In order to balance between punishment and forgiveness, one has to balance between the buddhi and bhava. And we discussed various examples of Krishna's qualities, how Narsingadev showed punishment and compassion towards Hiranyakashipu. And we discussed how Krishna dealt with Kalevana and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's personality of externally appearing to be filled with deep emotions, but at the same time, behind that, he was a very deep philosopher also. He produced that philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda, which perfectly agrees with all the statements of the Vedas. So like that, I'll stop here. Grantana Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.